So understanding that the world is an appearance that produces the illusion of space and time and matter and energy and motion and change and history and the evolution and devolution of forms in aesthetic, in ethical, and in spiritual terms of all those three dimensions of reality. So prior to that, before there is time, and during time, and after time, there is simultaneously eternity. The absolute self, we can put zero, start with zero, not one, because the absolute self, yeah, just write absolute self, is also known as the zero point. And this is why the zero, which is a one definition of the Shiva Lingam in its original state, it's also a candle flame, and therefore it's light, it's the source of light. But as the absolute self, it's the source of both light and awareness. And the potency or potentiality of the infinite creative intelligence that is latent within the unmanifest absolute. And it's unmanifest because it's prior to the emission of the space-time continuum that we call the cosmos. So that's zero. And then that zero becomes, you can just write the word trinity. It becomes a trinity. It splits into the first trinity. Trinity, and then put a colon after that. And the trinity we shall refer to here is that of Satyam Shivam Sundaram, a very famous mantra in the Vedic tradition. And in this tradition, the center, why it's written second, is not linear, but it's in the center between Satyam and Sundaram is Shivam. That is the signifier of the absolute self, and the absolute self then emits Satyam, truth, and Sundaram, beauty. Okay? And Shivam then withdraws. And so beauty and truth exist together as principles, still unmanifest principles, but those principles begin to dance. And in their dance, the Sundaram becomes Shakti and the Satyam is Shiva in the form of the of Allah, if you wish, or of Ishvara. And so number two, they in their dance collapse and decollapse different qualium and quantum wave functions to create a world of divine beauty and joy. So the what you'll write here is just write divine lila. Okay? And this
L-I-L-A or L-E-E?
L-I-L-A is good. And this means that the world is a play. It's pure play, pure joy. There is no good and evil yet. That hasn't arisen. This is Sat Yuga, in effect. This divine lila at its most fulfilling and total level of divine power that is inhabits every being. So every being is actually has the power of a god or a goddess to manifest whatever is desired. Intention will produce anything that is wanted. And the world then becomes a place of every kind of divine joy. Well, we'll go to number three. This paradise continues for a certain amount of time, but then Satyam and Sundaram begin to have a conflict. The conflict is this. Satyam loves sameness. You can write this. Satyam loves sameness, but Sundaram prefers difference, right? A woman wants to wear a different color dress every day. She's not going to wear the same thing, and different bangles and earrings, right? And right, different hairstyles. So beauty wants difference, wants change, wants every possible mode of a beautiful appearance, whereas truth doesn't want that at all, doesn't want her to change. She's perfect. Why change, you see? And so there's a conflict there. Truth, being a bit frustrated eventually, at the next level, Truth decides he has to control beauty because she's out of control. And he invents the logos, right? Truth, Satyam invents, Truth emits logos to control beauty, all right? And what is logos? Logos is the logic of nature, the laws of nature. Truth can use logic in order, we can say, to prune nature, to keep her from changing in ways he doesn't want by enacting a law of nature that says, no, you can't do that. You have to stay within these certain limits. So the world becomes ordered by logic, the logos. And in the Gospel of John, it says, in the beginning was the Word, the logos. But it means it was the beginning of historic time because history begins with conflict. And the conflict is that beauty is now under control and she has lost her freedom. So in the same way that, you know, when the grass grows too high, we call them weed whackers. They're grass whackers. We even, you know, abuse the term. But we cut down nature. We don't want her to grow in ways that are not in accord with our logic of what beauty should be, and it should be the same and be consistent and et cetera, right? So logic becomes a bit anal retentive, and beauty is kept within boundaries. And the result of that is that logos brings sorrow to beauty. And when you write logos, after it write, logos is diabolos. Why? Because it is a second power. It is a dualistic way of subject controlling object. So logos then... another name for logos is Lucifer. It's a power of light, of truth, but used to control the unfoldment of nature, to make sure nature unfolds in a certain way according to the will of the logos. And then in the next one, Truth realizes that what logos has given it is power over beauty. And now truth becomes faithless to beauty and gives its love to power. Okay? And it's at that moment that evil is born into the world in the full sense, right?
What do I write?
Let's see, what do you write for that? We've got to five. Truth prefers power to sad beauty. And so Now the world begins to, it loses that golden and silver aged quality, and a copper age ensues, a world in which nature is being harnessed to the will to power. And the love of power becomes the love of technology. And nature, the source of beauty, becomes raped by the desire for technological power and the use of nature for the resources of the will to power. So in revenge, number seven, beauty becomes ugly. She retracts her divine beauty, and she withdraws from the world, and there is no more Leela. The Leela is replaced by a simulation of beauty that is actually simply a product of logic itself. And beauty is lost, and the world becomes ugly, and Leela has become Maya, and it is simply a simulation of itself. Okay? So, I think that's enough to write there. Now, the next step then is that truth itself, having recognized the grave loss that is the retraction of beauty, because beauty was in love with truth, and now it cut that relationship. And so truth has been abandoned, and truth then shrinks into a lie. Okay, that's the next step. And the lie is what the Shaivites call the Anava Mala. The lie is now that truth is simply the consciousness of an individual lost in an ugly world. And truth has been lost, and power has been lost, because now technology becomes the oppressor of the very one who wanted to use it to gain dominance. And so all of us are extremely oppressed, even if we don't fully recognize it, by all of the technological means that are weaponized to keep us under control, mind controlled, and under surveillance, and under the constant threat of extermination through technological means, should the elite wish to pursue such a course, or putting someone like Julian Assange into prison for speaking the truth, right? Because the lie now must remain dominant. So truth is in exile and has been shrunken into a simulation of itself, a chaotic multiplicity of microcosmic, unreal beings. And so now this original power of truth has created a Frankenstein, and that monster has now taken power over it, and somehow this Frankenstein monster must be eliminated, or it will eliminate life, beauty, and truth, whatever remains of them. But there has been a loss of control over the logos. So at the next step, then, evil triumphs, seems to triumph over the world. And that's the state that we're in Kali Yuga, where pretty much everyone feels, not wrongly, that the world is under the control of the principle of evil. So that situation, because of the shrunken state of truth that is now in a delusion and has lost its capacity to recognize who it is, has lost the capacity to recognize and honor beauty for the divine principle that she is, and all has been lost because Shiva has retracted. God has absconded, as they say, and the world is shipwrecked in an atheistic, materialistic frame of reference. And becomes ever more hopeless as the weaponization and the conflict in the macrocosm of the planet reaches a point of imminent global destruction via the weaponized technologies. Then, number 10, the good news comes. Shiva returns. Shiva returns secretly, as Yeshua says, like a thief in the night. But Shiva begins to awaken some to their true nature, and they can bust out of the anavamala. They can bust out of this prison of false consciousness, in which one feels one is simply a bodily being with very limited power, and one is able to break free of that illusion. So there are many ways that Shiva cracks open the anavamala illusion, one of which are what you called last night your near-death experience, Brian, I think, right? I wouldn't call it a near-death experience. I think that's an inverted view based on the lie. I would say you're now having an illusory life experience, right? You broke through the illusion of this life into what is called death by the lie, but is actually eternal life and joy and love, right? But you were told you had to come back into the illusion. But at least you came back into the illusion now with an understanding that there is something more and higher. And so you were at least partially awakened, and then your journey could begin to reach that point of the total illumination of the instantaneous realization of God as yourself, right? So that's one way that that happens. And of course, through spiritual practice and through all the various means by which Shiva breaks through the delusion. And the reason that many beings who are trapped in the anavamala struggle to become awakened is because when Shiva returns, he enforces the law of karma. And the law of karma is a law that's higher than the law of logic. And so karma can cause the best laid plans of mice and man to gong aglay, as Robert Burns put it, and to fail.